Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. He's a lot of end friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today. You know him as the composer and lyricist of the Broadway hit Be More Chill, but I want you to remember these titles as well: Broadway Bounty Hunter, Blood Song of Love, The Black Suits, Rewrite, We the People, Hunter S. Thompson Musical, and Love in Hate Nation, because very soon all of those titles are going to be equally popular and beloved by everyone who loves musical theater. Welcome Joe Iconis to the podcast. I am not Joe Iconis, but this is Joe Iconis.
Hey, guys and gals.
This is so incredible, and I'm going to do that thing they do at auctions. They're like, let me take care of business for a minute. There are so many people I want to thank. First and foremost, Joe Iconis, and our very special guest star, Lauren Marcus, who will be performing. Yay. The W Hotel Times Square is so incredibly devoted to the Broadway community that they have created this space for us to come and commune and celebrate the artists that we love, and that I am a part of this in a small way in getting to share the people that inspire me every day. I cannot tell you the gratitude I feel. I also want to let you know that the people working behind the bar and the servers tonight are the loveliest humans on the planet. So, I think there's lots of ways to show love, but I think tonight tipping would be a really appropriate way to do it.
It's the best way.
Yes, and to 42/7, who produced these nights, and John Zaytoon, my dear friend, who I could not do any of this without him. And I just want to shout out to my daughter, who wrote my show music and sings it on my podcast, because I'm really proud of her, and she's the next generation of musical theater writers. So to Georgia and to all of you, thank you for spending your Sunday night with us. Joe.
Alana.
I feel like we're getting Joe Iconis on one of, I can't think, if I had asked him to come even 3 weeks after I invited you to come, mm-hmm. It would have been a long shot to get you here, because the expression, the busiest man in show business, I believe actually applies to you at this moment.
Yeah.
I have been investing a lot of time in my adult life and maybe in my childhood to musical theater writers like yourself. And the great Stephen Sondheim is someone I love very much, and his musicals meant the world to me. And something that you and Stephen, my buddy Stephen, share is a love of the rhyme. You are very devoted to something called the rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to think, are there any musicals that we love and stay with us forever? And we have the great Jen Tepper in the audience, so she might be the friend that we call. If there are composers and lyricists less devoted or ruled by rhymes in the musicals that they write, but why do we want them to rhyme? What is that that is so satisfying?
You know, it's a very personal...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be personal so early. I'm so sorry.
Intimate thing, my relationship with rhyme. You know, for me, I just think that rhyme makes things easier to understand. You know, in musical theater, I think the idea is that you're hearing... in a perfect world, you're hearing the material for the first time as you receive the art, right? So it's like the first time you're hearing the lyrics, in a perfect world, the first time you'd be hearing the lyrics in a scene would be the first time you're seeing the scene, right? So I'm of the belief that lyrics should be easy to understand. You shouldn't be questioning them as they're happening, and I think that rhyme helps that. I think that rhyme, if you know, oh, this word is rhyming with this word, it's easier to wrap your brain around something that's coming at you fast and furious. And so that's, to me, the sort of like no-brainer reason why rhyme makes sense in theater. Just makes it easier to understand.
Yes. So if we all spoke in rhyme most of the time, maybe we would, especially upon first meeting, it would be a good way to meet each other.
For sure, yeah. I think that, people, I feel like dating would be easier for people.
There's got to be an app.
If people just spoke in rhyme.
The rhyming bumble bagel.
Rhyming bumble bagel app. Yeah.
I've been married so long that I'm sure none of those things are actually at all the names of, like, I thought I just made a joke that would be accessible, and other than Sweet Lauren, I got nothing. Not to belabor the obsession with rhymes, but I know that Sondheim was also saying that the rhyming anthology that he uses is actually from the 1950s, because even though more words exist now, those particular volumes have the words going this way, and it's easier for him to scan as he's going down. Maybe Steve uses Google now, I don't know. But what do you use as, what rhyming dictionary do you use, or do you favor, or is it all right here, Joe Iconis?
It's, I would love to be able to say that I use this very specific rhyming dictionary.
Dog-eared with like a leather cover.
From like 1922, and it was passed down, and it was like Yip Harbor.
The family rhyming dictionary.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. But I use Rhyme Zone, which is so embarrassing.
For you kids at home, Rhyme Zone.
Yeah, it's a website. It's very easy to use. It's super user friendly. I wish I had a sexier answer.
It's all right. Rhyme Zone sounds sexy. Maybe if we said it in another language, like in French, it would be really sexy. Like, Rhyme Zone.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Well, I think most people here, other than a few hotel guests who are joining us tonight, and thank you, you had no idea when you came to the bar that you are going to be part of a live podcast. So thank you all for being here and for staying.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Those four people may not know about Be More Chill. Be More Chill is a musical that is really a miraculous, inspiring story that if someone set out to try to do it, it would never work. Mm-hmm. It had to be organic and made from love. And when organic, made from love things succeed, it makes all of us feel better about the world that we're in. I think I speak for all of us when I say that. But I would love if you could tell a truncated version of why Be More Chill is going to be on Broadway in just a few months, and how this like little Broadway show that could is a global sensation.
So Be More Chill is a show that myself and my collaborator Joe Trace wrote several years ago. We adapted it from a novel by Ned Vizzini, the late great Ned Vizzini, and it was a show that premiered at Two River Theater, which is a little theater in Red Bank, New Jersey, in 2015, and we hoped that it was going to go from Red Bank to a fancy off-Broadway theater in New York. That didn't happen. It seemed like the show was dead after we played for our four-week scheduled run in New Jersey, and then we recorded a cast album after the Jersey production, and through some sort of miracle that is unexplained, the cast album for the show sort of became this like viral sensation in spring of 2017, so like last spring. And because of the sort of phenomenon of the cast album, we were able to parlay that into an audience off-Broadway production of the show, which we did this past summer. The off-Broadway production sort of exceeded everyone's expectations, and because of the excitement around that off-Broadway production, we've been able to go to Broadway with the show. So that's sort of the shortest, least complicated version of the Be More Chill story. Yeah. Thanks.
For those of us who were lucky enough to see it at the Signature Theater this summer, it was very much a reminder of those of us who were lucky enough to see Hamilton at the Public. It's something that you got to sort of be there at this very seminal moment for it, knowing in your heart that it probably would go on to become something extraordinary, which it has. And I felt this summer at the Signature that it was very much like that, that we got to be inside the thing. The train was leaving the station and we were lucky enough to have a seat, is what it felt like to me. And I guess, you know, I mentioned my daughter was here tonight, and so many people here just love musicals, and there's something about them that they really connect to very deeply. Not that pop music or country music or classical or opera and lots of other forms don't do, but there is something about musical theater that really speaks certainly to the people who are here tonight,
yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
But I think it takes a very confident person to kind of pull a chair up to the table that is musical theater and say, I have something to offer. I think I have a voice that's original, and I think I have something to say that I would like to share. And my question for you is, as I am a parent raising children who I hope will be confident enough to say what they want to say out loud,
mm-hmm.
when did you go like, I have something to say and I'm not shy anymore, I'm going to say it out loud?
You know, it's so funny because when I was a kid, I was a fairly reserved kid. I was like the world's nicest kid. I was shy-ish, you know. I was not shy around like my immediate family, but around anyone else who was not my immediate family, I was sort of like a quiet, quite plump little child. And so I wasn't like the sort of like, you know, I wasn't this like sort of huge personality, right? I wasn't a particularly confident young man, but I was sort of raised with a very loving, very large Italian family who really told me constantly that I was like the best thing that ever existed. My family was like so supportive in such a crazy way that I think I had this sort of like innate confidence. So even if I wasn't like super, even if I wasn't super confident in my day-to-day life, I always sort of believed that like, oh, when the time comes, I'm gonna have something to offer this world, you know? And so I found my voice as a writer at the same time as I was kind of finding who I was as a man, you know. In undergrad, I was kind of like sort of neither here nor there. I was sort of like floating by, right? And so then when I got to grad school, I went to the NYU Musical Theater Writing Program. As I kind of developed as a writer and sort of felt like, oh, this is the way I kind of want to exist in the world of musical theater, it went hand in hand with like, oh, this is the way I want to exist in the world as a guy, you know. And so my musical theater voice was so closely tied to who I was as a person. And I felt like I sort of bloomed in both areas at the same time.
Well, not to harp on the word plump, but mm-hmm. you're not anymore. Like, you don't present as a bigger person.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a little person.
That's,
no,
yeah.
I mean, it's only relevant because at some point, you changed your outward appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And was that something you actually put a concerted effort into doing, or did it come out of like a health thing where you're like, I don't feel healthy? What was the shift?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I was always a very large, large fella for most of my life. And as I said, I have a big Italian family who are very wonderful and who really enjoy when people around them eat a lot, which
yeah.
I did.
I'm for that.
And do, yeah.
Yes.
And so I was just always quite large. And so when I was in, you know, I sort of like late in undergrad, I definitely hit this point where I was like, I don't feel like myself, you know, I felt unhealthy.
Right.
And so I tried to, you know, just like drop some pounds, and it just kind of kept going. So yeah, I lost like a lot of weight. And I don't know. And it's sort of, it was all kind of tied with this, this sort of like transformation of who I was. And, you know, of course it was all connected. It didn't feel like super intentional at the time. Like it wasn't like, you know, oh, I'm going to lose 90 pounds and I'm going to, you know, become more assertive and I'm going to, you know, become a musical theater writer. Like it right. wasn't, but that all sort of happened in the same few years.
But that's
for sure.
The narrative. That's
yeah.
what happened.
Yeah,
and
that's
that was
what
your
happened.
Story.
Yeah.
I know that you've told, because I've had the great fortune of having you on my show before,
yes.
little known fact. You talk about Little Shop of Horrors as being mm-hmm. like a big introduction for you of the kind of, maybe was that the first musical you saw?
Yeah.
And
September 27th, 1987.
Eastern Standard Time. So from then on, who were the writers and what were other musicals that you fell in love with within the genre as you started to grow?
Yeah, well,
so
Little Shop was my first show. So I had seen the movie, because the movie came out before the original production at the Orpheum closed, right? So I had seen the movie. I loved the movie. I saw a commercial for the Orpheum production. I was like, I want to see that. And so my father took me for my 6th birthday to see Little Shop at the Orpheum, and so that was sort of like what I knew of as musical theater. I also liked the Muppets a lot. I liked the Muppets Take Manhattan. So
yes.
I guess like the first two. Musicals that I really loved and was familiar with was Little Shop and Muppets Take Manhattan. And then the two shows I saw after Little Shop, my amazing Aunt Ro took me to.
Is she here?
She's right there, yeah. Aunt Ro. Hey, my godmother.
Shout out to Aunt Ro.
Yeah. She took me to Anything Goes at Lincoln Center, the Patti LuPone revival, but Patti LuPone had left by that time. So I saw Leslie Uggams. I think I made out well. And Into the Woods I also saw. And so it was like Little Shop of Horrors, Anything Goes, Into the Woods. And I always feel like I'm so lucky that those were like the first three shows
yes.
that I saw.
Yes.
You know, and I think like really all three of those kind of informed who I've become as a writer, you know.
Well, Malcolm Gladwell talks so much about 10,000 hours, mm-hmm. right? Putting in our time, but also this thing of luck. Like you were born at the exact right
yeah.
moment
yeah.
in terms of the kind of musical theater that was happening for your generation and mm-hmm. your access to it and
yeah.
living on Long Island. So mm-hmm. it's on Long Island, I've learned.
It is. Yeah.
You say on Long Island, right?
On Long Ebro, Island.
Am I correct?
Yeah.
And to get to come in and see it at that, like it all has to happen in that exact way.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes I even think about how I lucked out having the birthday of September 22nd, because I saw Little Shop 5 days after my birthday
yeah.
and Little Shop closed in November of that year. And so I always think about like, oh man, like what if my birthday was in December
yeah.
and by the time I would have been like, oh, I want to see Little Shop of Horrors, it would have been closed already.
You'd be an accountant.
I would,
like,
yeah.
Like the whole thing would have been completely different.
No, I know. Yeah.
If we could, you are crazily prolific. Like you're such a prolific writer.
Mm-hmm.
I if you guys were able to hear my intro, I named at least 7 musicals that we're all going to be seeing in our lifetime and loving, if Jen Tepper has anything to say about it, among many others. And I'm sure there's more in your catalog, both in a literal notebook and in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to kind of get to be a fly on the wall in the room where you write,
yeah,
what does it look like?
The room,
the room where it happens.
Yeah,
which are cafes or it could be anywhere.
Yeah, I mean the room where I write is a room that is constantly changing and growing. You know, it's like I'm a very messy writer, and so I tend to write not just in my apartment, you know, not just in my home. I love to write in public spaces. You know, I love to write at coffee shops or bars or really the thing for me that's the most helpful is when there's like noise happening in the
well,
background.
We're in the right place right
no,
now.
I know.
Would you
yeah,
like
yeah.
to write a musical joke? Like
yeah. Yes, exactly.
It's
yeah.
called oh. Bright Lights.
That's right.
Live Gaiety.
Yeah. But I find it so helpful if there's like a slight distraction sort of off in the distance.
So are you not singing out loud as you write?
Sometimes I am. I don't care about who's around me. Yeah.
Okay.
I just this past week I was in Charleston, South Carolina.
We all followed your story. We know everything you did.
Perhaps you've seen the photos.
Yes. Yes.
And so we were, my wife Lauren and I were at a hotel, and so I found myself working on one of the many shows I'm working on in the mornings before we sort of started our day in the hotel lobby, and I was definitely singing and speaking, fully out loud as I was writing. And I feel like here in New York, no one cares. I think like in New
York,
they
care if you're not.
They're worried. It's like, what's wrong with that quiet guy?
Why is he just reading the paper? Weirdo.
Yeah.
Security.
Right. It's like, what is he planning over there?
Yeah.
I felt like in Charleston, South Carolina, people were slightly like, why is that guy screaming about punk rock music at his computer all by himself?
Why is he?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to know.
Yeah.
Was that from? That particular ditty is going to be.
It's part of a project that I'm not allowed to talk about.
No,
yet.
It's just us. What? Yeah. It's just a few
it's,
hundred
no, I can't.
People.
It's one of the.
That's
no,
okay.
It's this gig. Yeah, we're gonna. You'll find out about it soon enough.
But you know, it's exciting when we go see this, because we will.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a punk rock song or a nod to punk rock. We're gonna all feel like. I know. Yeah, I remember. He was writing that in South Carolina.
That's
I know that.
Yeah.
Do you want to know about that one?
Yeah, it's like, oh, that's, When everyone goes to see Deadpool the musical in 2021, they're like, oh, man, I said the name.
I kind of did it.
No.
So you start with, we know you like to rhyme. Mm-hmm. We know there's a rhyme in two-player game that you're not 100% sure of.
Yes, yeah.
Is that something before Broadway that you're going to tinker with? That one rhyme that always is like, no.
No. And that's something that particular type of thing is something that always bugs me. There's a few lyrics in shows of mine that have been out in the world that I hate so much, but for one reason or another, I don't change them because it seems like other people like them, which is not to say that I'm just like, oh, I just want to like please other people. But it's, I recognize that sometimes I'm too harsh a critic. I'm too extreme a judge on my own work, and sometimes I get so hung up on things that I know don't bother anyone else but me. And so I try as hard as I can to be open to be like, you know what, dude, don't worry about that one lyric. It's not bothering anyone else, and just by changing it, you're just going to call attention to it. And so the lyric I hate in Two Player Game, I'm not going to change because too many people know it. And what's so weird is that a few people have mentioned to me like, oh, I know what lyric that is in Two Player Game that's not the real rhyme. And they always will recite back to me a rhyme that is a rhyme. And then it just makes me feel like no one even knows what rhyme is, so why do I bother in the first place?
And then you're like, that was my favorite rhyme.
Right.
And
no, it's like,
so now it's all bad.
Right. I can never be like, no, that's a good rhyme.
No.
It's like the rhyme you just you told me is a great line. I'm talking about something else entirely.
People can be so disappointing.
I know.
When they just don't do what we want.
No.
You now have had. It's rare. I mean, I've told this story before. I did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown with Kristen Chenoweth and really watched the moment that my friend, who remains one of the most glorious humans on the planet, became very famous. Like, I watched the anatomy of fame. I watched people trudge up 7 floors to get to her dressing room, which was on the very top floor because that's where her character's dressing room was. And I would literally stand on my second floor dressing room with like lemonade and cookies for Spielberg and Sondheim and everyone. I was like, I know it's far. Would you like to rest for a minute? Let me pat your brow. You want to look great for Miss Chenoweth. And so it was a very interesting thing, right? Like,
yeah.
And all of us here who know you and love you and so many of the people involved in what is called the Iconis family are a part of this ascent that is really a speeding train. And it's an incredibly exciting thing, and I'm sure it's heady and exhausting. Now that you are being asked to write things, not just because you love to write, but now you have deadlines and very grown-up things happening and films and just a lot on your plate, and most people want to take advantage. Mm-hmm. If it's happening, you're like, it this is a big moment. Yeah. I want to. So how are you handling writing sort of for pay or under pressure versus just for love?
You know, what's so funny is that what I'm experiencing now as far as the amount of writing and the amount of things that I'm having to do at all times, it's actually not very different from what I've been doing for the last however many years.
Yeah,
truly. Like I kind of came out of the gate with a work ethic that I think is pretty good, that probably came from the fact that I don't come from a family of artists. You know, I come from a family of like really hardworking,
you know, I'm obsessed with your superintendent mom of school, like obsessed.
You know, like, and my family are like, you know, like they're like workers, like everyone does a million things and has, you know, these sort of very full lives. And so I was just like, oh, if I'm going to be an artist, if I'm going to be this thing that feels so like ephemeral and like, oh yeah, I'm a writer, man. I felt like the only thing that I can do to control that is to like work really hard and do as much as I possibly can to achieve whatever it is I want to achieve. Right. And so I've, what that turned into was this whole like Iconocin family concert thing, and was all of these 10 million shows that some of which are now like coming to the forefront.
Yeah.
But it's like all of the work that I've been doing for the last, like, you know, whatever it is, 10, 12 years, that's sort of allowed me to have all of this stuff now when people are finally kind of paying attention. And so like the level of stuff that I'm having to do now is really not all that different. There's just more of it, and it's all sort of higher pressure, but the actual like day to day of like, oh, I got to figure out how to work on, you know, 15 projects in one day. That's something I've been kind of doing for years, you know? Except now I'm getting paid for some of the projects, which is great.
Yeah.
That's the
really
change.
Exciting.
That's nice, you know?
What do you do when you have writer's block? Do you have any tricks or kickstarts or any ideas that might help someone else if they find themselves?
Yeah. You know, the best thing, the thing that Lauren Marcus always says to me is if I'm like hung up on something, she's always like, just leave it, just walk away from it and come back to it. And so that's the thing that I try to do so hard, but I'm not very successful. I think I'm getting better, but I definitely have a terrible tendency to get really frustrated when I have writer's block. And I just like, I do the worst thing, which is like, oh, if I just really concentrate and just really fixate and get really angry at this
get
page.
Get mad at that paper.
Yeah. That's going to make it better. And it never does.
No, it doesn't, Joe.
No.
It doesn't.
No.
I know. So I want to ask you about one song in particular.
Yeah.
Also tonight, Joe Iconis and Lauren Marcus are going to perform for us, which is so amazing and crazy.
Yay.
And we're so lucky. Michael in the Bathroom may be, I mean, there are so many things that have to happen for things to catch fire the way Be More Chill did. And, and having that cast recording was extraordinary. And there was video of Michael in the Bathroom. So that also might have helped get it out into the ether. Tell me about writing Michael in the Bathroom. I was in the bathroom just a few minutes ago, and it was playing, and I was like, that's cool. That had never happened before.
Yeah.
Can you just talk about like the anatomy of that song, which we love so crazy much?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that song had a very sort of organic birth. You know, it was a song that as soon as I kind of dove into Be More Chill as a piece, I was like, oh, there should be a song where Michael is alone in a bathroom at this party. Like it sort of immediately presented itself to me as a great moment for a song. You know, and so many times in my career thus far, I've written songs that are like sort of really large explorations of really tiny moments. That's something that I love to do. And I love to take these little moments that I feel like multiple people have experienced and blow them out so they feel like these big musical theater epiphanies, right? And so that it just immediately kind of hit me like, oh yeah, Michael should be sad in a bathroom after he has this fight with Jeremy, and he should have this huge musical moment that's unexpected because he's the second banana, and the second banana in a show like this isn't supposed to have a song like that. And so when I finally put pen to paper to write it, it just kind of came very quickly. You know, it's a song that I haven't even changed all that much from the first version of it that I wrote. I think the biggest change in that song is that I took out half a verse towards the end. But other than that, the first kind of swipe that I took at that song is what people know, you know. And what's so weird about it is that that song before Be More Chill, I did it in concerts a few times, and either with me singing or with someone else singing, and it always connected with people. But it's like the ultimate example to me of how you know, like the whole idea of like the Iconis and family stuff is like it's art as a collaboration, right? And I think that art is better when you have this group of people who you really believe in and you're making stuff together. And so Michael in the Bathroom became Michael in the Bathroom because of George Salazar, because of his performance, right? And so it was this song that I like the song a lot. I think it's a very good song, if I do say so myself. But it was the combination of that with George Salazar that created something that clearly it was like very special for very many people, and really is the thing that has allowed us to get where we are. But that never would have happened if it was just me singing that song. And it never would have happened if we, you know, if we cast that role Two River with someone who was in the show because he was famous, you know, or someone who was in the show because he was, you know, musical theater famous.
Right.
It was cast with George Salazar, who was the right person for that part, who had never done a part like that. And it was, you know, something magical that's sort of bigger than the song itself.
Well, the Iconis family is just filled with unicorns, like these incredibly gifted, beautiful people who have hearts as big as their voices. It's really an incredible collection, and I talk a lot about you and this front row because if there's one takeaway, it's loyalty. And people believe that they can't be loyal and get what they want. And I know there have been moments of frustration where you don't get to literally every single time get everyone you love in every show.
Yeah.
But pretty much, and if they're available, pretty much you get to have them. And I just think that's like the most beautiful part of all of it, beyond the talent and the glory that is being received. It's loyalty, and we need that.
Yeah, it's definitely by far the thing I'm most proud of about all of this. And you know, my greatest hope with Be More Chill is that if it, you know, I mean, the fact that we're going to Broadway is insane, but like if it, you know, if it does well on Broadway, I only hope that it sort of builds up every other thing that I'm working on and every other person that I'm working with.
You know,
and it's like all I want is to be able to like be like Lin-Manuel famous so I can write a musical with 100 people and
That's
I can
right.
use 100 actors who I really, really love, you know. There's just like not enough roles for all the people that I love. And you know, for me, like the first part of my career, I had so much of it was about loyalty and people in the business telling me that it was wrong of me to only want to, in their words, work with my friends, and constantly having to fight this perception of me as being someone who, like, you know, just wanted to work with his buddies.
Right.
Which was always, you know, incorrect, because my buddies were like, you know, Annie Golden and like these just, or John Gallagher Jr., like actors who I was fans of, you know. And so for me, it's so satisfying to know that, oh, I'm, you know, I'm getting to Broadway. It like took a while, but getting to Broadway, and I'm getting to Broadway with so many people who I've worked with for so long.
Yeah.
And so, you know, who knows, maybe we'll be open one day, which will be fine. But I know that if we are, as long as we make it for one performance, I will be able to say, like, I got to Broadway on my terms and by being loyal and by not being an asshole, which many people said couldn't be done. So I at least could be like, oh, it can be done for one show.
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe
and
even
it's
two.
Happening.
Yeah.
So I don't want to keep anyone from getting the unbelievable pleasure of having Joe and Lauren sing. I just want to say one thing. You know, I always do a very deep dive into the life and the world of the person I'm interviewing, and it's been so great because I've gotten to do it a few times now with you. And people keep talking about, in reference to your work, that you're writing about people who feel like they're misfits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the reason your shows, and I got to see, you know, the black suits, I've seen so much of your work over the years. I think the truth is, you know, when you described yourself as a younger person, we all feel that way. Like, there's not one person on the planet who walks around going, I fit in perfectly. Like, just that's not anyone's middle school or high school experience
right.
or adult experience, even if they are achieving the grades they want or the place on the team that they want. Everyone suffers. Mm-hmm. Everyone suffers, whether it's a personal heartbreak or something at home or just...
Yeah.
In big and small ways. And so I think the reason these shows resonate is all of us who are like secretly walking around like we fit in, it's a place where we can go, oh man, like, no, I don't, right? It's like being part of a huge, you know, global 12-step program where we all get to say like, I'm Alana and I'm a misfit. And you have created show after show where we all get to feel connected in what makes us different instead mm-hmm. of constantly trying to be the same. And the same keeps changing. Like when I was like Bumble, Bagel, what it, like that app is done, right? Like whatever dating app I referenced. So everything just goes by so quickly.
Yeah.
And you're creating art that we can constantly find ourselves settling into and going, but this will always reflect what it is to be human and what it is to feel like we're looking for our place, and that will just never, whatever technology shifts in future productions of Be More Chill, if the computer starts looking like something else, or if we always keep it a period piece 20 years from now when it's revived, like you're just creating a place where we feel safe. So thank you all for coming. I'm gonna say goodbye now, and I'm going to open up the stage. Lauren Marcus, can you come here for 1 second?
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure you are aware that Lauren Marcus, but your dad is just left.
John
left.
Dad.
I know. Yeah. He's going to see A Chorus Line. By the way, the man who just left is going to see A Chorus Line. And we said the only reason anyone can leave early is if they're going to see A Chorus Line. And he really is. And we saw his ticket, and it's true.
Yeah.
Totally true.
John Simpkins, director of Black Suits.
Yes.
And Love Song.
And who's been like
and
a real champion.
Best director ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the great little known fact, if you don't know, is Lauren Marcus, who stars in Be More Chill, is also Mrs. Joe Iconis, or he is Mr. Lauren Marcus, however you want to look at it.
Mr. Lauren Marcus.
Mr. Lauren Marcus.
Yeah.
They are going to perform for us. Give us 2 seconds just to make everything perfect for them. Thank you for being here tonight. You are the most glorious, beautiful
people. Thank you so much.
And thank you for spending Sunday night with Little Known Facts. Be right back. Just talk amongst yourself.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing? Good, 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 good. I'm getting the crowd warm for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Do you want to talk about this song?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
And what it is?
Sure. So Joe and I have done, I would say, 2 runs, but the second run was like one show. We wrote a show together called Love Letter. It's kind of this tribute to Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash, where we're playing these strange fictional versions of them plus ourselves, and it spans about, I don't know, 40, 50 years. And I'd say it's about 85% using the music of Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash, and 15%, I just got scared about doing math in my brain, right? 15%.
Yep.
Songs that we wrote ourselves. And so we wrote the show together. And then this song you're about to hear called Life Will Happen, we wrote together, which is the first song we've ever written together. I'm a singer-songwriter too. We're different types of writers. But this was actually supposed we each were like, I'm going to write 2 songs. And this was supposed to be Joe's second song that he wrote.
Yeah.
You can jump in. Do you have something you look like you want to say?
No, I was just I was trying to be visually supportive.
Oh, thank you.
I was like giving you,
supportive
eyes.
I'm going to keep talking for 1 more second.
Great.
And so the show was in about 2 days, and he was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have time to write this. And I kind of was like, well, I have an idea. So I kind of wrote down the idea I had, and then he took it, and he's like, oh, I have an idea, and he kind of like put music to it and changed some things, and we worked on it, and then this is the song.
It was a true collaboration. It was like in that movie Music and Lyrics with Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, it was just like that.
Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
I never saw that movie, but I imagine that's what they did.
You're just like Drew Barrymore. I'm just like Hugh Grant.
Yeah. Not the first time I've been told that.
So
do you
want
to sing it?
I do.
It's so weird how my microphone is. Like, normally I have, like, a boom stand, but this microphone is, like, it's really, like, intruding on my personal space.
Are you okay to keep going?
Yeah, I just, like, wanted to say that before we started the song.
This isn't part of the song.
Yeah.
You're good?
I'm good.
I see your brain. I see your brain a-churning, plotting your next move. That same old flame, that same old flame's a-burning. It's got lots to prove. But I promise, ooh, I promise, ooh, I promise, if you stand here with me, I'm getting you, I'm getting you exactly where you're supposed to be.
Let's take it one step at a time. Just sing your songs and I'll sing mine. Before we know it, they'll be on their feet and clapping, 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 clapping. You can try to force our hand, but it'll never go as planned. Leave it alone, my love, 'cause life will happen, 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 happen. I know that when I wait it out, I figure out just what to sing. It's all awful then, you're crying and you're looking at your wedding ring. And I promise, ooh, I promise, ooh, I promise, now that you're my wife, I am loving you, I'm loving you forever, loving you for life.
Let's take it one step at a time. Just say your vows and I'll say mine. Before we know it, they'll be on their feet and clapping, 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 clapping.
We can try to force our hand, but it'll never go as planned. Leave it alone, my love, 'cause life will happen, 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 happen. Then comes the sweet, strange, scary day we learned a baby would be here. And since he appeared, he leads the way, and we just take it year by year, by year, by year.
We'll take it one step at a time. We'll sing him your songs, I'll sing mine. Before we know it, they'll be on his feet and clapping, 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 clapping. We can try to force our hands, but it'll never go as planned. Leave it alone, my love, 'cause life will happen, 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 happen.
Were we smart just like we thought, or were we foolish? Heaven knows.
Well, you could ask our son or daughter, but they're all playing their own shows. And so I promise you, I promise you, I know we did the best we could. By letting life, by letting life alone, and baby, it was good.
Took you one step at a time. You sang your songs and I sang mine.
Before we knew it, they were on their feet and clapping, 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 clapping. We can try to force our hand, but it'll never go as planned. Leave it alone, my love, 'cause life will happen, happen, happen. Leave it alone, my love, 'cause life will happen, 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 happen. Leave it alone, my love, 'cause life will happen. Lauren Marcus. So now I'm gonna do a song just myself. How is the sound? Can we hear words? Is the piano loud enough? Yeah.
Sweet. So listen, this tune is from... the song is from a musical that I'm working on called Love and Hate Nation. And it's a musical. Yay! Thanks, Amara. It's a romance between two girls in a juvie hall for girls in 1962. And this song is a song that is sung by one of the two girls in that romance. And her name is Sheila Nail, and she's the most badass chick in juvie. She's sort of like a 17-year-old female James Dean. And the notable thing about this song, there's a few notable things. One is that it's a song that should always be sung by like this like crazy amazing actress who's like an incredible actor and an incredible singer and just a really charismatic performer. It should never be sung by someone like me in a VIP booth at the W Hotel, but I'm doing it tonight. There's also all of these backup parts in the song, which I don't have anyone else to sing them with me, but I'm just going to point to everyone, and if anyone knows the backup parts, you should sing them, and if you don't know the backup parts, hopefully you can learn them as the song goes along. The song is also very long. As I realize that this is sort of like there's like a kind of a party vibe here on this floor, I realize this is not a great song to choose to sing here because it's like a really long theater song, but that just makes me want to sing it more. So... So I'm doing it, and so this is the song for Sheila Nail, and Sheila, as I said, is this badass chick who is in juvie, and Susanna Sun, who is the heroine of our musical, she meets Sheila towards the top of the show for the first time, and all the other gals in juvie are like, oh, Susanna, Sheila Nail is the most badass person here in Hate Nation, which is the name of the juvie hall, and she is so badass because she has escaped more times than anyone has ever escaped in the history of juvie hall, and Sheila is like, oh, stop. I don't want to talk about it. And Susanna is like, how'd you do it, Sheila? And Sheila is like, no. I don't want to talk. I'm too cool to talk. I don't want to talk. And a few of the girls say, tell her about it, Sheila. The first time I tried it, it was late at night. I tied some bed sheets together, tied them up real tight. Tied one end to a drain pipe, threw the other out the window. Oh, uh-oh. Looked past the edge, 40 feet below. I threw my leg over, thought, here I go. And started climbing down the side of the building, side of the building, climbing right down, right down. Getting looks from the squirrels in the trees and feeling the breeze across my nightgown, nightgown. And I was a few feet from freedom. I was just a few feet from freedom. And then I heard a stop right there. Put your hands in the air. And I knew that my plan was a fail. Getting caught is the worst, and that was only the first of the three failed escape attempts of Sheila Nail. Three failed escape attempts of Sheila Nail. Everybody, three failed escape attempts of Sheila Nail. Now, the second time I tried, it was another day. There were bed sheets involved, but in a different way. I hid inside the laundry bin. You would not believe the things I saw. Sha-na-na-na. Waited for hours, thought I was gonna get stuck. But then the orderly starts pushing me toward his truck, which meant that we was headed out of the building, out of the building, heading right out. Right out. I was covered in clothes, through a hole in some hose. I saw a light sprout, light sprout. I knew I was a few feet from freedom. I was just a few feet from freedom. And then I heard the orderly shout, look, a foot sticking out. And he lifted off my veil. Oh, the warden was beckoned, and so go the second of the three failed escape attempts of Sheila Nail. Three failed escape attempts.
escape attempts of Sheila Hanel. Three failed escape attempts of Sheila Hanel. So after that, I said, forget the clever plan. I saw an opportunity and I just ran. Got as far as the highway. I stuck out my thumb. A car slowed up and hear the warden come. She called me a filthy malcontent. And yeah, that was exactly how the third time went. But that ain't really how it happened, it's just what I say. Cause I did get in that car and as it drove away, I thought of where I came from, and I thought of where I'd go. Oh, where am I gonna sleep tonight? I don't know. I got no family, I got no coin in my purse. Yeah, life was bad at school, life before it was worse. I haven't been a civilian since 53. And I know the world's changed substantially. Yeah, and school is scary and so unfair, but at least I got a purpose, I'm respected there. Hey driver, hey driver, hey, I'm not of age. You best take me back, 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 back to my cage. And back to nation I went. Oh, so embarrassingly of my own consent. Last time I tried, it was a different affair. I tied some bed sheets together and I stood on a chair. Tied one end to a drain pipe and the other around my neck. Oh heck. And without any prep, I took a step and I could feel the air leave my body, air leave my body. It got real tight. I never copped to this kind of shit, but I have to admit it didn't feel right. And then I was a few breaths from freedom, but it didn't feel much like freedom. And then the drain pipe broke and I let out a croak, and the water rained down on me. Now I don't believe in signs, but I can read between the lines. So I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. With the rain pouring down inside of the building, pouring right down, right down. Woo! I lit a hidden cigarette as I stood soaking wet in my nightgown. And bars and cages define my freedom, but now I make my own kind of freedom. Running away is a bore, so I don't do that no more. I see a battle, I fight, I'm my own shining white knight. I might be fucked in the head, but hey, at least I ain't dead. And babe, I'm gonna prevail. By now you ought to derive, because I fought, I survived the three failed escape attempts of Sheila Mail. Everybody! Three failed escape attempts of Sheila Mail. Three failed escape attempts of Sheila Mail. Freedom, I live to tell the tale of the three failed escape attempts of Sheila Mail. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening. Do you know there are over 120 episodes of Little Known Facts with Alana Levine at this point? So if you love this one, but you're a new listener, go back to the beginning and catch up. I promise you, every episode will shed a light on an artist that inspires you in a whole new way. It is such a pleasure to make this podcast for you, and I hope if you love listening as much as I love making it, that you'll head over to my website, littleknownfactspodcast.com. There's a donation page, and truly, any donation, large or small, makes such a huge impact on my being able to make over 100 more episodes for you guys. So I really, really appreciate it. I record this podcast at the Hangar Studios in New York City. If you ever are interested in making your own podcast or any kind of recording, go to thehangarstudios.com and get more information on how they make the magic happen. Thanks for listening.